Hello and welcome to Legal Lad's Quick and Dirty Tips for a More Lawful Life. I'm your host, Adam Friedman. Today's topic, Constitution 101, the powers of Congress. And now, your daily dose of legalese. This podcast does not create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. In other words, although I am a lawyer, I'm not your lawyer. In fact, we barely know each other. If you need personalized legal advice, contact an attorney in your community. This is the first installment of a series of episodes I'm going to be doing on the U.S. Constitution. Consider it to be Legal Lad's contribution to the 2012 election season. For more on the Constitution, you can check out my other episodes on the Legal Lad page at quickanddirtytips.com, as well as my new book, The Naked Constitution, What the Founders Said and Why It Matters. Before we delve into the Constitution, I have just a little preamble to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. Did you know that you can hear Legal Lad while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio? With Stitcher's free app for mobile phones, you can get the latest episodes of this show and all your favorites. And when you download Stitcher to hear Legal Lad, you have a chance to win some money. Find Stitcher in the App Store or at stitcher.com/legal. Download it, and then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter LEGAL to be automatically entered to win a cash prize. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. Plus, you'll have access to all the QDT shows and thousands of other podcasts on demand. It's always available, no downloading or syncing, and it saves memory on your phone. I use Stitcher all the time to hear my favorite shows. I really love it. And I'm not the only one. Stitcher has won all kinds of awards, including Best App Ever and the 2009 Webby. That's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter the promo code LEGAL at registration. Now, back to the Constitution. We start our series with Congress, because that's where the Founding Fathers started. Article 1 of the Constitution sets out the powers of the legislative branch. The legislative branch consists of the two chambers of Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Members of the House are elected every 2 years, and they represent districts that are roughly equal in population. Members of the Senate are elected every 6 years, with two from every state. And there is our first controversial point. Every state gets the same representation in the Senate, regardless of population. Some critics regard this as anti-democratic, since it means that small states, like, say, Delaware, get exactly the same representation as big states, like California. But Article 5 of the Constitution basically locks in this feature by guaranteeing that no state can be deprived of its equal representation in the Senate without its consent. And what state would consent to that? It's also worth noting that senators were originally elected by their state legislatures. The idea was that senators would act like ambassadors of the state governments. This only changed in 1913 with ratification of the 17th Amendment, which provided for direct election of senators. Even today, the 17th Amendment is unpopular with many who favor decentralization of power away from Washington and in favor of the state governments. To enact a law, a bill has to pass both houses of Congress and get presidential approval. It usually doesn't matter which house of Congress starts the process, but bills that impose taxes or otherwise raise revenue have to start in the House of Representatives. To get a bill passed, a simple majority, 51%, will generally do the trick, but there are some exceptions. For example, it takes a two-thirds majority to pass a constitutional amendment or to override a presidential veto. Perhaps the most notorious exception to majority rule, however, isn't in the Constitution at all. The so-called filibuster, by which one or more senators can require a 60-vote supermajority to pass a bill, is simply a matter of internal Senate procedures. Yet another reason why the Senate is the more controversial chamber of Congress. You might think that the only limit to Congress's power is its own tendency to succumb to gridlock. But in fact, the Constitution itself sets strict limits on Congress's power. Article 1, Section 8 sets forth an exclusive list of the subjects upon which Congress can act, generally referred to as the enumerated powers of Congress. Most of these powers are quite specific. For example, Congress can establish post offices, regulate the currency, issue patents, establish the army and navy, and, of course, impose taxes. In describing what was then the new Constitution, James Madison said that the powers of the federal government would be, quote, few and defined. But today, not many people would say that Congress has just few powers. So how is it that Congress, and by extension, the federal government, has come to do so many things? The answer lies in a single word, commerce. One of the enumerated powers of Congress is, quote, to regulate commerce among the several states. Although many people originally considered this clause to mean simply that Congress could make rules for interstate trade, the Supreme Court, in the 1824 case of Gibbons v. Ogden, ruled that commerce, in Article 1, should be construed more broadly to allow Congress to regulate the commercial relations among the states. This ruling gave Congress additional leeway to regulate matters that might otherwise fall within the jurisdiction of individual states. But it took over a century for Congress to take advantage of the full potential of the Gibbons ruling. The Great Depression of the 1930s led to the election of Franklin Roosevelt, whose New Deal program involved a large expansion of federal power. In the early years of FDR's administration, the Supreme Court actually struck down several pieces of New Deal legislation regulating things like business practices and agriculture on the grounds that the Constitution leaves such matters up to the states, not the federal government. The Supreme Court changed course in the 1937 case of NLRB v. Jones and Laughlin Steele, which upheld Congress's power to regulate labor law, another subject that had traditionally been reserved to the states. Justice Owen Roberts, who had earlier opposed the New Deal, switched sides to support it. Some say he did so to fend off FDR's plan to pack the court with six additional justices. Thus, Roberts' vote is sometimes called the switch in time that saved nine. The nine justices of the Supreme Court, that is. Basically, the Supreme Court said that commerce is a flexible word that can change with the times. And when combined with the Constitution's proviso that Congress can pass laws, quote, necessary and proper to effectuate its powers, Congress has extremely broad powers to regulate matters that affect interstate relations. And yet, even after the New Deal, there are still limits to Congress's power. This was seen most recently in the Supreme Court's decision on the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as it is sometimes called. The court held that the Commerce Clause does not give Congress the power to require Americans to purchase health insurance. However, the court held that Congress could impose a modest tax on people who do not have health insurance. It was only on that basis, the taxing power, that the act was upheld. More proof that death and taxes are the great certainties of life. Thank you for listening to Legal Lad's Quick and Dirty Tips for a More Lawful Life. Thanks again to our sponsor this week, Stitcher Smart Radio. You can send questions and comments to legal@quickanddirtytips.com. Please note that doing so will not create an attorney-client relationship and will be used for the purposes of this podcast only.